Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, August 7, 2014. The United Nations mission in South Sudan is evacuating hundreds of aid workers from Upper Nile State as new militia group targets humanitarian workers.
When hostilities suddenly flare, as they did in Mabon County this week, that can seriously impede the ability of both the UN and non-governmental organizations to deliver the aid and also enable their staff to operate under reasonable standards of safety and security.
And South Sudan government says there will be no peace without rebels participating at the peace talks in Addis.
We believe that we cannot bring peace without the rebels unless you are telling us that you go and fight them out, a situation that we don't want. So we are here to negotiate peace.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. United Nations and international aid agencies are pulling off out of Upper Nile State's Mabon County due to fighting. A local militia in the county is believed to be responsible for killing six aid workers this week. Yesterday, UNMI sent 120 peacekeepers to protect the local oil strip to facilitate the evacuation of aid workers. For VOA News, Simon Waki Wudu has this story from Juba.
The acting spokesperson for UNMI says efforts to evacuate aid workers are ongoing. Joseph Contreras says 220 workers were evacuated on Wednesday.
The decision, I think, reflects deepening concern about the security situation in Mabon County. We're told that the SPLA has sent reinforcements in from barracks in Malut, and that SPLA troops arrived there yesterday, and they managed to restore some order to the county seat, Bunj, and nearby areas.
The UN blames the Mabonese Defense Force for the killings and says the group seems to be targeting rare civilians, apparently in revenge for losses they suffered in clashes with the defecting Nuer soldiers in late July. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon and U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry have both condemned the killings. Contreras says most of the agencies withdrawing from Mabon have been providing food and shelter to more than 127,000 Sudanese refugees who fled fighting in South Kordofan and Blue Nile states. He says the aid agencies also run feeding and nutritional programs and provide non-food items, including blankets, to the refugees. Contreras is worried about what impact the latest fighting will have on the refugees.
When hostilities suddenly flare, as they did in Mabon County this week, that can seriously impede the ability of both the UN and non-governmental organizations to deliver the aid and also enable their staff to operate under reasonable standards of safety and security. So for now, we're encouraged that the situation become quiet in Mabon County since the spate of murders on Monday and Tuesday, and hopefully we'll be able to get these aid workers back into Mabon County to resume operations as soon as possible.
Contreras warns that aid workers cannot return to Mabon County until the security situation normalizes. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The latest round of peace talks between South Sudan warring factions is ongoing in Addis. As VOA Gabe Joslo reports, the conflict is threatening to spread across a northern border, which could inflame tensions with Sudan.
South Sudan's government and the rebel opposition failed to meet for scheduled talks in Addis Ababa Thursday, apparently because of opposition complaints about the negotiation process. The two sides have committed to peace talks to end a conflict that began in mid-December when a political dispute between President Salva Kiir and his main rival, Riek Machar, turned violent. But the opposition team has declined to participate in the discussions during the past 2 days, saying it wants to talk directly about ending hostilities before discussing political reforms. A previous agreement called for the two sides to form a transitional government by an August 10th deadline, now just a few days away. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwe-Lueth says they cannot forge any new deal without the involvement of the opposition.
For the government, we believe that we cannot bring peace without the rebels unless you are telling us that you go and fight them out, a situation that we don't want. So we are here to negotiate peace, and whatever time it takes, as long as the rebels accept to sit with us on the table, we are capable of bringing peace.
This is the fifth time since the conflict broke out that the two sides have engaged in peace negotiations, mediated by the East African Regional Group, IGAD. Three previous ceasefire deals collapsed soon after signing, with each side blaming the other for violating the agreements. Meantime, recent reports of violence near the border with Sudan have raised concerns that the conflict could soon expand. The United Nations says at least five aid workers were killed Monday by a militia in Mabane County of Upper Nile State. The Nuba Reports media outlet, which focuses on the region, reports South Sudanese rebel forces loyal to Riek Machar have also been spotted near the border. Ryan Boyette, Nuba Reports executive director, says that while details are difficult to confirm, it is believed that the opposition is in Mabane to receive weapons from Sudan.
There's no strategy for the SPLM and opposition to be that close to the border near that location, except for to cross the border and get arms or to get supplies.
South Sudan's government has long accused the rebels of receiving support from Khartoum, a charge the opposition has denied. Any increase in fighting along the Sudan-South Sudan border would put at risk some 125,000 Sudanese refugees living in South Sudan territory, having fled violence in Sudan's Blue Nile state. Sudan's military also regularly targets rebel groups in the area that fought against Khartoum during the civil war that eventually led to South Sudan's independence in 2011. Gabe Joselo, VOA News, Nairobi.
South Sudan government is organizing mini-conferences on peace and reconciliation in state capitals. IGAD, which is mediating peace talks in Addis Ababa, proposed that South Sudan's leaders gather views from the grassroots on how the country can heal wounds created by nearly 8 months of conflict and reconcile citizens with one another. The mini-conferences are being facilitated by IGAD officials. For VOA News, Philip Thornaleu has this story from Juba.
More than 340 people, including MPs, youth and religious leaders, attended the first mini-peace conference in Yambio, Western Equatorial State, this week to hear views from a diverse group of people on how South Sudan can move forward as a united country. Tulio Odingi is a member of government-led committee in charge of national dialogue. The committee works out of Vice President James Wanyika's office.
The mini-conference will lead us to national conference for peace and reconciliation which will be organized in future. This has come out of the recommendation from the IGAD countries. They want to know exactly what are the views of our people.
Odongi describes the conference in Yambio as useful, and he believes the view gathered in Yambio represent a larger section of South Sudanese. The Minister of Agriculture, Forestry and Animal Resources, Benda Macharading, accompanied the Vice President. He says during the mini-peace conference in Western Equatorial State, participants called for peaceful transfer of power.
Our people believe that our president, who was elected by the people, cannot be overthrown by other people who thought that they want to be leaders in this country. Anybody, it was agreed, anybody want to become a leader should come through the ballot box, not bullets. And these were the concern. And the majority within the Western Equatorial States agreed from the grassroots level. And the same thing will continue to other states.
Deng says when the government and the opposition reach a permanent peace agreement, the views gathered at the mini conferences will be presented at the National Peace and Reconciliation Conference. Deng is optimistic the current political conflict will be resolved through peaceful means.
The government needs peace. That peace should also be started from the grassroots. Who are the real stakeholders? From the Boma levels, Payam levels, and counties, up to the states.
For VOA News, I am Philip Thornaleu in Juba.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Being bitten by a dog is painful and can be very dangerous. It can cause infection and even rabies. Children are particularly vulnerable to dog attacks because they are short and their faces are usually close to the animals. To protect yourself and your family, avoid strange dogs and teach children to stay away from them. If a strange dog approaches you, remain calm and avoid direct eye contact, which the dog can understand as aggression. Never run from a dog. They like to chase moving objects, and most dogs can run faster than people can. If you are attacked, try to stand still with your feet together. Protect your neck and face with your arms and hands. Then call for help. And if you or someone you know has been bitten and the skin has been broken, seek medical treatment immediately.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudan's budget discussion. That story is coming right after this.
You don't want to miss VOA's South Sudan in Focus. You can hear us on one of our FM affiliate stations around the country or on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. In Juba, listen to South Sudan in Focus at 8 p.m. on 93.5. You can also find us on shortwave at 11995, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what can be done to improve the time it takes for court cases to be resolved?
When crimes occur in rural areas, it takes a lot of time for the judiciary to intervene because they don't have facilities, transport facilities. Road transport is always difficult. So for judiciary system to reach such rural areas, there is need for infrastructure in place.
They need to increase the number of magistrates and lawyers so that they could be able to do their work faster.
Decisions that are supposed to be made today are postponed to be made 3-4 months down the line. This affects the legal process. It caused people to delay. I think the legal system within any country are competent to ensure that to review all these cases and make decisions as soon as possible.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Members of Parliament debating the proposed 2014-2015 budget say they have observed mistakes between what government departments are allocated and what they actually spend. They say most of government agencies are spending more money than allocated. In a heated debate during the second reading of the budget, MPs also expressed concern about millions of South Sudanese pounds they say the government is losing to tax exemptions. Philip Thornalew reports for VOA from Juba.
Several members of parliament say serious questions about the 2014-2015 budget have yet to be answered. They say while some ministries and government commissions overspend the money allocated to them, other ministries have no budgets. Gony Makwany Mayul, chairperson of the National Assembly's Specialized Committee for Economy, Development and Finance, says in the last fiscal year, some ministries spent their entire annual budget in only 6 months.
In financial year 2014-2015, the Minister of Finance and Economic Planning budgeted for SSP 181,905,070. There is discrepancy in the budget of the Minister of Finance, which is a violation of the Appropriation Act 2013-2014.
And Mukwai says the Office of the President also overspent its budget's allocation last fiscal year.
The committee observed that certain directorates within the presidency have been over-budgeted. Example, administration and finance, at the tune of SSP, 22.5 million for vehicles.
Makwach says essential oversight government agencies like the Anti-Corruption Commission and National Bureau of Statistics, did not get the funds allocated to them. He says it is important to know how last year's budget was spent to help lawmakers determine how to allocate funds for the upcoming fiscal year. Makwai calls overspending on certain things and underfunding on critical budget items, institutional weaknesses. Makwai says the government is losing billions of South Sudanese pounds by exempting private companies from paying taxes. He says if the government collected taxes on corporations, the country would not have to rely so heavily on oil revenue. Makwai says the country lost 627 million South Sudanese pounds to custom exemptions alone during the fiscal year 2013-2014. Rebecca Jechua Okwachi, the National Minister of Telecommunications, says it is high time the government put revenue collections of private companies back on track. She confirms that telecommunications operators were awarded major tax exemptions on profit and income.
Yes, there is a construction mistake that has happened before I came to the ministry. I found it there, and we are working very hard. We have already worked on documents. We have already communicated with the Cabinet Affairs. And now, together, we are moving to the Minister of Justice to ensure that despite the fact that there is a mistake that had been committed, it has to be corrected so that we give ourselves a chance to recoup a lot of our money that is still at large.
Onyoti Adigo Nyukwaj, the minority leader in Parliament, says the entire budget does not address economic challenges facing South Sudanese. Adigo says road construction should have tough spending, not salaries and wages, which account for more than 80% of the current South Sudanese fiscal budget.
The present budget is not likely to make economic growth, and it is not developing the poor. The budget should invest heavily on infrastructure to address the social needs of the people and unemployment. People with special needs, vulnerable groups, are missed out. And also the budget is not gender sensitive.
Adigo says the Social Welfare Ministry, which helps women, children and people with disabilities, is one again underfunded in this year's budget proposals. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Juba.
We turn to Kenya now. A quarter of country's population are farmers. Few of these 10 million have ever received training on how to improve their production or how to expand their business with financing. Most of these farmers shun the idea of loan after seeing neighbors lose livestock or whole farms when they can't keep up repayment of loans. But now a new company is offering cash for conservation measures in the hope that the so-called green loans will help farmers with better borrowing terms while teaching them how to protect Kenya's most fertile soil and ensure that the country can keep feeding itself. Hannah McNish reports from Kenya's Aberdare Mountains.
...56-year-old Samuel Karaoke has been farming since he left school, harvesting the same vegetable crop each season. But this year, Karaoke's neat rows of cabbages are bursting into one another, and he is expecting a bumper crop of potatoes. After years of struggle, his success is thanks to a $90 loan that he used to buy top-quality seeds and fertilizer for the first time. We've had a lot of problems, he says, noting a lack of finances, then a lack of market, and then infestations of bugs and diseases. He says he never wanted to take a loan before because there's always so much collateral. Karaoke has seen farmers in this mountainous region a couple of hours outside Kenya's capital, Nairobi, lose everything to loan sharks after failing to keep up with repayments. But his experience was different because of a new microfinance company called F3 Life. It offers small cash loans starting from as little as $20 to as high as $180, depending on repayments and the completion of basic conservation practices. The scheme, designed by Zimbabwe-born conservationist Mark Ellis-Jones, includes free monthly training in farming aimed at boosting productivity.
And we also provide a loan where we peg the interest rates to the quality of soil conservation that a farmer is practicing. We ask farmers to build grass strips across the contour of their slopes, which prevents the loss of topsoil from their farms.
As the loans increase, farmers are asked to plant trees to increase the protection of fertile topsoils otherwise washed away. F3 Life says that such simple measures can extend the soil life from about 20 years to 1,000 years. In this area, where vast patches of brown dot the once verdant hillsides, the soils might only last another decade. Continuing land degradation could pose serious problems for a growing country's ability to feed its inhabitants. Over the past 50 years, the world has lost one-third of its arable soils. F3 Life agronomist Ngigi Obadiah hopes to roll the Green Loans pilot scheme out nationwide to try to save Kenya's soils as the population booms.
At the moment, we are servicing 52 grants. We are anticipating to increase the number to 350 in 1 year's time. In 2 years' time, we anticipate to have 10,000 and about 500,000 within the next 5 years.
Samuel Karaoke says that his cabbages are the talk of the town, and many farmers are already sold on the idea of green loans that can help the entire community. As profits grow higher than the tall grasses protecting his plot, he plans on buying a pickup truck to cut out the middlemen, making a small fortune selling farmers' produce at a market that will soon be in their reach. Hannah McNeish for VOA in the Aberdares, Kenya.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. Islamic extremists seized more territory in northern Iraq today, capturing Iraq's largest dam and taking over several predominantly Christian towns, forcing thousands of residents to flee. The dam provides crucial water and electricity to millions of residents in the main northern city of Mosul. The militants overran Mosul on June 10th. Kurdish forces in northern Iraq claim they still control the facility. Pope Francis appealed to the international community to help end the humanitarian tragedy in the country. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is in Afghanistan on an unannounced visit to meet with presidential candidates locked in a hard-fought dispute over election results. On his second trip to the country in a month, Kerry is expected to press for a resolution between former Finance Minister Ashraf Ghani and challenger Abdullah Abdullah, who disagree about the results of a runoff vote that placed Ghani as the frontrunner. Kerry plans to meet with the candidates today and Afghan President Hamid Karzai tomorrow before heading to Myanmar for an Asian security conference. On a July visit to Afghanistan, the secretary mediated with candidates to begin an audit of votes from the June 14th runoff election. And finally, NATO Secretary General has called for Russia not to send troops into neighboring Ukraine under the pretext of a peacekeeping operation. Speaking to reporters in Ukraine's capital, Kiev, Anders Fogh Rasmussen said Russia should step back from the brink, step back from the border, and not use peacekeeping as an excuse for war-making. He also accused Moscow of continuing its efforts to destabilize Ukraine, saying its support of pro-Russian separatists in eastern Ukraine is growing in scale and sophistication. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
We now go to West Africa. The Ebola outbreak in West Africa has killed more than 900 people across four countries. That includes dozens of health workers who caught the disease, 32 in Liberia alone. Many of that country's health clinics and hospitals have shut down as nurses and doctors refuse to risk being exposed. VOA's Anne Luke has this story with reporting by Prince Collins in Monrovia.
Dr. Melvin Korkor says he has a pretty good idea how he got Ebola, though it's impossible to know for sure. A woman came into his facility, Phoebe Hospital in Bong County in central Liberia. The patient had no fever, but she was vomiting.
She said she was from Banga instead of Lofa. The next day, I was a little bit suspicious. I said, well, I hope you are not from Lofa because there's every indication that you are a suspect.
They later found out the woman lied. She had come from Lofa, an area at the Sierra Leone and Guinea borders that is at the center of this regional Ebola outbreak. Five nurses from Dr. Korkor's hospital have since died of Ebola. When he tested positive, he was taken to Monrovia and then to Lofa, to an isolation ward.
So one of the patients that has just died, they prepared a bed and went in. And my heart became hardened, and I said to myself, I was going to make it. And I told my wife, just bring me my Bible, and that's what I'm going to go by, you know.
He forced himself to eat, even though he did not want food. It was lonely. He tried to stay calm. He saw other patients growing despondent, hopeless, and passing away. He survived.
It was like I was being reborn.
His hospital is now closed while health workers get trained on Ebola. The virus is transmitted through close contact with an Ebola patient's bodily fluids. The virus is transmitted through close contact with an Ebola patient's bodily fluids. People caring for the sick are thus at especially high risk. Many health workers in Liberia don't have the necessary protective gear, the masks, the gowns, the eyewear. As a result, health centers and hospitals around Liberia's capital, Monrovia, are shutting their doors. The risk that any patient coming in the doors could have Ebola is simply too great. Nurse Timothy Walker says his clinic didn't even have gloves.
Our friends are dying on a very serious note. We want to die like a dog. If the government can provide protective gear, sorry, we will not come to work. We are afraid.
Local residents standing outside the shuttered clinic say they are in an impossible situation.
Because if we're sick, we cannot go to native doctor. We don't familiar with native doctor. We got to go to the very clinic, and all clinics are closed down. Even in Unification City, all clinics are closed down. You go all around. Even around the very county, people are calling all that. Even pregnant women, they had to go to clinic, and they need medical facility. They don't have it. So right where we are today, we don't know.
Health workers who continue to work say they are afraid, and that people outside the clinic are afraid of them. Physician's assistant McFarlane Kukula.
Whenever you are in uniform, people shy away from you on grounds that you are being infected with Ebola virus, so they don't want to see you, they don't want to ride any car that you are getting.
The dozens of health workers killed during this Ebola outbreak include some who have had access to protective gear. Public health experts say errors are happening. This is the first time most West African doctors and nurses have dealt with Ebola, and people are undertrained and overworked. On Wednesday, Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf declared a state of emergency. She said not only does the country have more than 500 confirmed and suspected cases of Ebola, but people are now also at risk of dying from treatable illnesses common during the rainy season, like malaria and typhoid, for lack of medical care. And look, VOA News, Dakar.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Ceasefire by Richard Adeva and Young Bo.
Zeta Duban, Junub Sudan, Bele Jamil wa Aziz, Lakisi Yasa Shilu Nasfa, Ukate Zaman, Nina Kulana Kanma, Shin Leki Dam, Shuf Shabab Bimud, Iyal Bimud, Bejian, Metalga, Ofof Kaman, Kuli Yoma Halbika, Mama Bikore,
Rabbi,
we want peace.
Not solved. All I see is children dying. No orphans every day. I see the mothers crying. Lay a drama. Zaman kanja kela na bin belet na biniya. Mia feel mia bada mendin fadia like in gibu katia. Zaman to will mother go funia. Stop the iron fist. Peace and love is what you're looking for. We're dying for equality. Dying for humanity, prosperity and justice. Stop the.
We have been listening to Richard Adeba and Young Bo with that song, Ceasefire. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.